The Up and Under podcast is proud to be a part of Off the Ball Network. For all things basketball, football, soccer, golf, baseball, sports betting, you name it, go to offtheballnetwork.com and check out the amazing articles posted by writers of the network, including yours truly, and the other podcasts on basically every sport under the sun. Off the Ball Network, your home for quality sports and entertainment content. SeatGeek is the newest sponsor of Off the Ball Network. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a 99.9% chance you love sports. But watching these games in person is super expensive. To help ease the pain in your wallet, use the promo code OFFTHEBALLNETWORK to get a $20 discount for first-time users of SeatGeek. Your next best night ever is waiting, and SeatGeek has the tickets.
I'm ready with y'all, I guess.
All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, whatever. What is good, everybody? It's your boy Francis Carlotta on episode 52 of the Up and Under podcast. The conference finals are well underway, with both series being basically what, the inverse of each other after the first two games, because you have out west, can Jokic dethrone the king? Out east, does anybody at Boston have an answer for Jimmy Butler? Who knows, y'all? Who knows? But one thing I do know is that there's no Grant and Connor today. Grant is actually in Memphis visiting family and friends, and I couldn't be more jealous, so incredibly jealous of that. And Connor is celebrating finishing business school. But I think I'm the real winner, because I am joined by co-host of the Three the Hardaway podcast, one of the first people I engage with on Memphis Twitter, one of my favorite people in general, man. You're my guy. I really respect you a lot. Marcus Savage, what's going on, man? Welcome to the podcast.
What's up, man? Long-time listener. You guys know it got a little bit spotty with you guys being busy, but, I mean, I respect y'all for doing y'all's thing. I know you just had the law school. You a champion with your competition. Champ.
And then, that's right.
Didn't they win again after you
yep.
left? Yeah, I'm like,
yeah, because I coach him too, so I won as a player and a coach.
Player and a coach, pretty, man. Hey, look, I'm jealous of that. But yeah, I'm definitely glad to be here, man. I love talking basketball. I love engaging with you on Twitter with Grizz Twitter and NBA Twitter. So I'm always about to pull up and talk hoops, man.
No, I appreciate it. It's an absolute honor to have you on. It's been a long time coming.
Yes, so, sir.
You know, it's been way too long. We've been talking about this for a few months, and like, you know, what are we gonna do, the crossover and everything? So we got one step there. So let's get into it. Let's talk basketball now. Kind of like what I did last episode with Brandon, we did a look back before we looked forward into where we were at in the playoffs at that time. But something happened. Something happened just recently regarding a certain Memphis Grizzlies point guard named Ja Morant. Mm-hmm. So we got to talk about that first. So before we get into what's happening in the playoffs, we got to talk about Ja. So for those who don't know, on Sunday, May 14, basketball fans across the country woke up to a video of Ja Morant on his friend's IG Live flashing a gun again.
Again.
And after the video, again.
On Mother's Day, man. I'm like, we
celebrate on Mother's Day. Come on. Oh, my goodness. After the video was made, I mean, I tweeted that meme of Ben Affleck, you know, smoking a cigarette and looking just exhausted. And I'm like, that's how all of us Memphis Grizzlies fans feel. I mean, that's definitely how I feel. You know, I'll share my thoughts in a moment. But Marcus, I'd love to hear from you. And I know you've talked about it on your podcast as well. What are your thoughts? What were your immediate reactions to the second incident with Ja?
So Sunday, of course, was Mother's Day, and I'm generally up early anyway, because Sunday is church. You know, I got to get my daughter ready. Wife has to get ready. We got to eat and all that. So I'm up at like 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I'm an I'm a longtime member of First Shift Twitter, which means I'm up at like 5 and 6 tweeting, yep. going through everything. And yep. so I'm like the first to see it from like, at least from Grizz Twitter. I'm like, okay, like what's going on with this? And like, this gotta be fake. Cause the first go around a couple months ago, we thought, oh, that's fake video, a fake picture.
Right.
It does, the gun is like really small, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I was like, hold on now. Let's wait and see. And so literally like 10 seconds later, I see the actual video of the guy and Ja Morant, and I'm just like, oh my god, not again. And I like the momentum from like 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 in the morning, it just sped all the way off, man.
Spiral down, yeah. Yep.
And so my immediate reaction was like, he cannot be this stupid to do it again. Now, granted, of course, DTAP's IG Live had like 100 people in it, but it only takes one person to take that, record it, and then send it to TMZ, send it to the masses, and then we saw what happened, you know, later on that day. So that was my immediate reaction. And of course, we're still waiting on suspension. Well, he's been suspended indefinitely, but there's no games to be played, no basketball activities.
Sure.
I'm not sure. I'm not even sure the definition of what is supposed to happen, at least right now. Does it bleed into the regular season? Does he get fined? He hasn't been fined yet, you know, so.
Right.
And of course, the legality of it is not illegal what he did. Like, he has a gun. Anybody can own a gun in Tennessee. He's on his driveway at home, you know, playing music, which people do all the time in Memphis, whether that's in East Tennessee or that's in downtown Tennessee, you know, or Memphis.
Yep.
So it's like what he did technically isn't wrong. But I like how KG put it yesterday on his podcast, where it's like, once you shake the commissioner's hand, you put that hat on, you don't get to choose when you get to be professional, man. Like, it's a lifestyle change. And I equivocate that to even like as a graduate of a you know, undergrad, grad school, doctoral, whatever. Once you cross that stage and you're into the professional world, there are certain things that you cannot do. I cannot go on IG Live flashing the gun, or I'll get in trouble with my job. You know what I'm saying? So right now, and you probably saw it on Twitter, I've muted the words Ja Morant and 12 and Ja and Morant, because I'm just over it. I'm over it. I just, let me know whenever ESPN has breaking news and how many games he gets, if he gets fined, if he gets traded, which I don't think will happen, but people are talking about it on social media.
Yeah. No.
I'm just waiting on just what's going to be the concrete punishment for him, and then what are, you know, for him and for Zach Kleiman and for the Grizzlies organization, what's the process of where do we go from here? Because we cannot have him doing it again in August, September, and October. Just can't do it. So I'm exhausted, but I'm just waiting to see what is the solution, for lack of a better term.
No, I think you put it in really, really great words. I was actually going to talk about the KG video as well, because kind of like what you were saying, it reminded me of, you know, I haven't passed the bar yet in California. I'm going to take it again in February, but I've done the like the moral, the character tests and all that stuff, and that's all passed, thankfully. But when I pass the bar and I become a practicing lawyer in the state of California, there are so many things that I can't do. Hell, I can't even do them now, because if I do, then my moral character is down the drain, and I won't be able, even if I pass the bar, it won't matter, because I wouldn't be deemed not fit to practice law in California.
Right.
And excuse me. And that's a similar idea that KG was mentioning, that you were talking about as well. Like, when you get drafted, you shake the commissioner's hand, you put on the hat, you have to, whatever, you got to let that go. Like, whatever it was, whatever you thought was cool or flashy or fun or whatever, some things you just got it. You can't do it anymore. And right. I think Anthony Sain put it really, really well also on his podcast at Bluff City Media, talking about when he saw the Ja video, he realized that he cares more about Ja Morant than he cares about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that just can't be the case, man. That can't be the case. When you're Ja Morant making hundreds of millions of dollars, You're an idol, an icon for millions
global
of people, global icon for millions of people across the world, old and young, especially the younger ones. Like, you doing this again, you know, one time, you know, what's the saying? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And you do it once, okay, you know, mistake, you saved face, you went to therapy, you went, oh, you did this, I did that. And now you do it again. And it's just, it's kind of like a, it just shows you don't care enough.
Slap in the face of us as fans and as supporters.
Exactly. And that's how my word of the day for this is just disappointed. Like, I am disappointed. It's really sad to see. Like, that's how I felt when I saw the video. I'm over here in San Diego. So, you know, I woke up probably around like 6 something in the morning. But obviously by that point, it's like 8 o'clock out there in Memphis, 9 o'clock on the East Coast. So people are already talking about it. I'm very confused. And then I also see the video and I'm like, golly, man, again, really? Like, come on, this is just, this can't happen. He has to be better than this. He has to be better than this. It's interesting to see the different spectrum of the takes of the John Moran stuff. Yes, like one side is like, you have people who are like, oh, well, he didn't break a law, totally legal to have a gun. Why is this a big deal? And he shouldn't be suspended, or this shouldn't be talked about. And then you have the side is like, you should put him in jail. You should lock him up. You should suspend him all 82 games and blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's such a what. And then you have people of all different types, like all different types of people on both sides of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. It's really weird. So where do you think, how do you feel about, I guess, the weird dialogue around this, and where would be a fair suspension for you in your mind?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like election season, where it's like you got the Republicans, you got Democrats.
Right.
I'm somewhere in between. I'm like, look, I know you have to make a decision ultimately at some point, but there's some in the middle is where the truth is. And more times than not, I'm kind of that way, unless I have a strong like inclination one way or another.
Sure.
With this one, just based on like previous history with the NBA. So like I mentioned, Miles Bridges, who had domestic violence, and he was guilty of that. They gave him 30 games. You're not giving John Moran 30 games. I cannot see that. Now, he is a repeat offender, quote unquote, in terms of like he did it once and he had 8 games. I would guess like 12 to 16 range in the number like suspension. And that won't hurt that much. It'll hurt a little bit, grand scheme of things, they got Tyus Jones. Tyus Jones is the best insurance policy going. And if I'm Tyus Jones, I'm like, yes, like I get to prove, who
Come
I
on,
am
man.
Again, you know. I mean,
oh my God.
I wonder what does Tyus Jones think? Like either Ja gonna get hurt or he gonna get suspended one way or another, like just based on the history of Ja and his, you know, missing games. But I can't see them suspending him too long. Maybe enough. I forget who said this. I think it might have been Verno. Get suspended long enough to where you missed that all NBA number. So like the 65 game numbers, right, where he might be right on the cusp of that to kind of, you know, the cushion for like injury. If he gets injured, he'll miss more games. So he probably won't get it anyway. That's what I would say with it. But Ja, he has to. I think the best example for Ja Morant, it's like LeBron James, which is like crazy because LeBron is LeBron. But like when LeBron got to the league, he learned quickly he has to move differently. Like once you're in the league, like you can't be doing what you did with your friends back in South Carolina. Like that's not going to fly, man. And you are in a different, you know, level, different tax bracket, different everything where you can't keep doing hood tendencies in a rich environment. You can't do it. Like not as a basketball player, no. Not as like Nike's guy, because Kyrie's no longer there. You are the guy. You are the face of the NBA. You have to move differently. But 12 to 16 games is about what I would say. Anything more than that, I would be legitimately surprised.
Okay. I think that's fair. I mean, for me, I was thinking 16 to 20 is where I was thinking in terms of the possible suspension. You know, to the extent to what you were saying before, 25, 30, I would be a little upset. That's too much. That's too much. I don't think they're going to do that for Ja. But in terms of, you know, obviously before he got suspended 8. So it's a repeat offense of the, you know, I think in every NBA contract, that's that morality clause. So, and that's the basis of the suspension in the first place. So since it's happened again, probably double it, you know, 16. That takes him out of all NBA discussions because he would be below that threshold of no. He'd have a game in hand, but he's
right
gonna
at
get
the
hurt.
Cusp. Like if it gets hurt, right, yeah, out of, yeah,
yeah. And he, you know, it's unfortunately he does have I want to say he's injury prone, like the big ones. You know, knock on wood, knock on everything, but he does get hurt. So, you know, he's probably no matter what suspension he gets, he's probably not going to be eligible for all NBA. And the other thing is like if he. if he just didn't, you know, he wants to own a gun, sure, like own a gun. But why, what crossed his mind in the moment to be like, oh yeah, camera, gun? You know what I mean? Like, why? What? Why?
Is it's like high school, man. It's like, what are you doing? You're 23 years old, man. Like, what are we doing?
It's like, why is that a thought? Did you see, do you see what Lil Wayne said? On Fred,
who's, I heard about it, but I haven't watched it yet. Or what he said.
The long story short of it, he was like, you know, if I came from the same place John Moran did, city of like 3,000 people from the hood and all this stuff, then I wouldn't know how to act either. Like making all this money, like I came up with like a pretty stable household with a mother and father who really cared about me, who worked their butts up for me. So like I at least had some sort of idea of how to act when I get to, I guess, where he wants to get to in his career. I thought that was an interesting take. You know, there's just been a lot of discourse around Ja, obviously. And I think I also liked a lot what JJ Redick said about the situation too. Talking to Mad Dog, saying like, and I don't like Mad Dog, but saying to him, like,
yeah, Mad Dog,
so like how would you want to, like, you just, suspending him for half the season, like that's just not going to happen. That's not a thing. None of that's going to happen. I mean, in terms of if the Grizzlies, well, yeah, let's transition to how do you think this affects Memphis's offseason? Because to me, I think it affects it a lot, you know, and I'll share my thoughts why. But what about you? How do you think this affects their offseason?
Obviously, it's a gift and a curse. The curse being that you're going to lose Ja Morant for however much. And then also just him having to come to terms with what, like, maturity, like you have to like make significant changes for the betterment of, you know, for his career. A lot of people who come from those backgrounds, they feel like they have an obligation to be, you know, what's the character's name, like Robin Hood, like give back to the hood, you know, do all those things. But you can't save everybody, man. Like you just can't. You have to worry about your family first. Like family comes first before you take care of anybody else. But as far as the Grizzlies off season, like I said, gift and the curse, and the gift is that you don't owe him $40 million, no, for the duration of his contract because of the all NBA situation. But it hurts in terms of like, you don't have Brandon Clark going into next season. You probably won't have Ja Morant to start the season. You're probably going to bring in, I don't know if they're going to go get OG or Mikal Bridges or whatever, but whoever you bring in is not going to have chemistry just yet with Ja Morant. If he's suspended from team activities, practice, preseason games, you know, whatever.
Right.
So by the time Ja Morant comes back, and we've seen it happen before, once Ja comes back, there's like a weird dynamic of like, can Ja be Ja? Does Ja need to facilitate? Because, I mean, Jaren was killing without Ja being there. Jaren was killing. You know, Tyus didn't have a great year. But the other guys who need to step up did step up. And so my fear is that if the season starts off well with Tyus starting at point and whoever's the new small forward for the Grizzlies, if Ja does get inserted back into the lineup, what does that look like? Like in terms of like the pecking order, it looks like Ja, Jaren, everybody else, Bane. But, I mean, if the team is clicking and y'all like 10 and 2 or like 15 and 5, it's like, do we want to mess with this right now? You know, it's going to be interesting. Zach Kleiman definitely has a project on his hand, his offseason on and off the court. I personally think the Grizzlies will be okay. They've been without Ja. I think Ja is going to be in a different mindset. My only hope is that Ja's mental health is in order, because he talked about depression, and I don't care what anybody says. If you're on the sidelines watching the team be successful, you like, man, they killing it without me. And when you get out there, you feel like you got to prove yourself. Like, I'm still worthy of this contract, worthy of being the face of the franchise. So I think they'll be okay. I think it's kind of getting overblown a little bit, and I kind of expect the Grizzlies to just go all in on, like, I would say elite level, like, role players. Like, we've seen Denver's role players killing it. We've seen Miami's undrafted roster
killing it. Goodness gracious.
And we'll get into that later. I don't think they're going to get like OG. I think they're just going to get some good role players around, you know, Bane and Jaren and Ja. That's what I think.
Well, and if we were to get a guy like OG, I saw someone on Twitter that Brooklyn, you know, sources state Brooklyn's not going to trade Mikal Bridges. So, I mean, I honestly didn't think they would anyway. That was always the ultimate pipe dream in my mind as a Grizzlies fan. But in terms of OG, or, you know, maybe training for Jeremy Grant or whatever, or DeMar DeRozan and Alex Caruso, which is something I've been seeing a lot on Grizz Twitter, you'd have to trade Tyus. You'd have to, because of all the people with contracts with value that are movable, Tyus is really it, because you're not trading Jaren, you're not trading Desmond. I mean, Ja, I don't want to trade Ja, and the Grizzlies aren't going to trade Ja. And then the rest of it's just like, you know, Zaire, Roddy, it's rookies and young guys. So, I mean, maybe they trade Steven Adams, but you would have to get a center in return. Like, nah, like, I don't think Adams' contract is movable either. So it's like a catch-22 with Ja Morant's suspension. It's either you hold on to Tyus Jones and you try to make that margin move, like trading for Luke Kennard. That's like a margin move, that it's a good one, and you got to win on the margins if you're a small market team. But that's not like a NBA championship needle moving type move. And but you can't. That's the only move available if you hold on to Tyus Jones. If you want to trade for OG, trade for, you know, DeMar, Alex Caruso, Jeremy, whatever, insert player here, you have to include Tyus Jones. And it's, that's a part of the discourse too for Memphis people. Is like, do we still say, screw it, we're just going to trade Tyus? We need to get the, we need to get this guy to bring our roster to the next level. Job will come back at some point, you know, 15 games, 20 games, whatever. And then we'll just hang on to, like, you know, say we got Caruso, DeMar DeRozan. Then we're going to be good. We got Caruso, DeRozan, Bane, Jaren, Steven Adams. That's a really good starting five. And then when Ja comes back, he takes place of Caruso, and you're golden. So, I mean, I guess it might depend on what is the trade package out there for Tyus Jones. Because, I mean, again, if it is DeMar and Caruso, I think you go for it. I think you go for it, because you get a point guard in return and DeMar DeRozan. But you know, that's obviously easier said than done. This ain't 2K, as we know. These right. trades are hard. And the other point that I want to make with how this affects the offseason is it makes, like, the negotiations with other teams and even free agents. Like, Kyle Kuzma is going to be a free agent entering this offseason too. It's going to make negotiations much harder, because you're coming from a position of weakness for two reasons. One, everybody in the NBA knows what the Grizzlies need to be a championship contender, a true one. Everybody, like, you know, these dudes, they'll consume more basketball in their lives than we could even dream of. Like, this is their livelihood. This is their everything. So they know what the Grizzlies need. So that's already one. That's already a position of weakness. Two, with the Jaw stuff, there's more incentive, it's more imperative to want to get these moves done to improve this roster. Because we just don't know what's going to happen with Ja. We don't know how long he's going to be suspended. We don't know what this roster is going to look like fully. So it really impacts how the Grizzlies are going to negotiate and talk to these free agents and other teams with trades. So I still think, you know, God, the likelihood is probably what you said. They probably do like a middle move, like a margin move. It's probably what will happen. I mean, I hope they do a home run trade. But those are hard, man. Those are hard. And we have the draft picks, but now it's, do we have the contracts that are movable to get the assets back?
On top of the new CBA, where it's like, exactly. it makes it so much harder to have just two good players, and then you got to put people around. You can't just load up on all these contracts. It's not going to happen in the next CBA.
For sure. So it does complicate things. So it'll be a fascinating offseason. I mean, look, I personally believe in, you know, we can talk about Memphis offseason on a different pod, but like, I hope that they don't keep their first round pick. You know, I hope they use their first round pick and other assets and make a trade. But at the same time, it has to be worth it. Like, it has to be worth it to get rid of the assets. And it's a genuine question if there's a move out there that's worth the assets. It's a question. It's so any other thoughts about Ja and Memphis before we move on?
No, that's it, man. Hopefully we hear something in the next coming days. I'm ready to know what's going to happen. I do need either Zach Kleiman or somebody from the organization to come out and say, what are the steps that Ja is going to actually be taking? I know that, you know, counseling is private.
That's a good point.
You know, yeah, right. But as far as his actions, what's happening off the court, what is no longer going to be tolerated, because they cannot have him doing what he has done the past couple of months if they want him to be a healthy NBA player. I'm worried about his livelihood more than his NBA player, you know, or like, will he be okay and will he be safe in Memphis? That's all I care about. So,
yeah, I think that's really well said. So yeah, we'll end the Ja discourse on that note. So Thank you for that. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about the second round of the playoffs before we get to the Western Conference Final. And Marcus, it's time. It's time for me to get on my soapbox.
Go ahead, man. Do you
about the Phoenix Suns and give my eulogy of the Phoenix Suns. I said on the last pod with Brandon that it was on hold because they won. They won games three and four. So it was on hold. But it was in the drafts, you know. It was there. It was waiting, and it's ready. So, my wife is a big Game of Thrones fan. You know, she's read all the books. She's seen the show, of course, multiple times. And before meeting her, I wasn't into Game of Thrones at all. I don't know. It just wasn't my thing. But thanks to my amazing wife, she showed me Game of Thrones, and of course, obviously, it's fantastic. I love the show and everything. One of my favorite lines is, "What do we say to death? Not today." Well, Marcus, the day has come for the Phoenix Suns to say hello to death. This is the end. This is the end of the Phoenix Suns. It is time for me to give the eulogy that is 2 years in the making. And let me start with KD and Devin Booker because I'll keep it short, like Booker's time as an MVP contender. Super short. Booker still needs a table setter to be the most effective version of himself. And with Chris Paul being 80 years old, Phoenix got to figure something out. So they got to figure something out with Book. You know, he had the 36-12 game and in the playoffs against Denver, and everyone freaked out because he had 12 assists. Like, the 36 points, you know, whatever. He can do that on a given night. But he has to improve as a passer, and I just don't think that'll consistently happen. So Phoenix has to figure something out. KD, fully respect your game. You're top 15 of all time. You're phenomenal, man. But I guess you need three Hall of Famers instead of two to win an NBA title. I guess you need three, because two is not enough. You know, you had one
you
with Russ.
Now, France, you wild.
I'm saying, he had one with Russ, and then that, and Harden too, but, you know, Harden got traded, whatever. So that didn't work out. Then he got three, then he won two, which is great. And now he has two this time, didn't win title. So maybe you need three, whatever. Monty Williams, the 2022 Coach of the Year, who 1,000% didn't deserve that award. Look, Monty, I'm sorry you got fired. I really am. But this might be a blessing in disguise, because now you don't get to go down with the sinking ship. You're out of here. You know, your career might still be intact. Whereas if you stayed with this team for three more years and you watched the end of Chris Paul and Devin Booker being an unrest and KD probably leaving the Suns after his contract, like, now you're gone. You got your Coach of the Year. You have an NBA Finals appearance. Man, look, don't worry. Be happy, Monty. Be happy.
Plenty of options, man. He got plenty of options.
Yeah, Milwaukee, you're good.
Philly, Boston,
right.
Potentially.
Exactly. Like, look, this is a good market for you, Monty. Like, people still respect you, man. So be happy about this. Now, Chris Paul. Oh, boy. Chris Paul's flopping, not nut-punching bitch ass. He is a walking contradiction like those old Starburst commercials. You remember those Starburst commercials where it's like, you're a walking contradiction because, you know, Starbursts are solid and or juicy like a liquid, but solid or whatever. Mm-hmm. So Chris Paul is that. And I've said this for years, that Chris Paul is the perfect compliment to Devin Booker. Perfect compliment. But who cares if he can't stay healthy when it matters most? Who cares? And that is the sole reason why I never believed in the Phoenix Suns as a real contender. Never believed it, because when you need Chris Paul the most, what happens? Pulls a groin, hurts his leg, hurts his shoulder, something happens to him, and it's been the way for years. That's why they couldn't beat Golden State when he was at Houston, because he got hurt in game, was it game six?
Then
it was
game six.
And you just can't count on him anymore. Great player, point guard, all that stuff, but it just doesn't matter, because when it matters the most, when it comes to the depth of the playoffs, you can't rely on Chris Paul. So get him the hell out of here. But that's not going to happen, because the Suns are going to fully guarantee his contract. So hopefully they trade him. And if they're going to put Chris Paul on the trade market, you know, somebody's going to be desperate enough to trade like three first-round picks or whatever for Chris Paul. It's going to happen. Some team's going to do it. But it ain't the Grizzlies. It ain't my team, so I'm good. It ain't going to be us. And then lastly but not least, DeAndre Ayton needs to be sponsored by Charmin. Because he is ultra soft. He is ultra soft. He is the perfect person to snuggle up with a toilet paper, like the logo. You know, you see the ultra soft logo is the bear,
yeah, snuggling up.
He's snuggling the toilet paper. And DeAndre Ayton, perfect guy. He's a handsome face, and you know, he's a good looking dude. He can snuggle with the toilet paper with the logo for Charmin, because that dude is soft as hell. he is so damn soft. I actually hope he's on the Suns next year, because if he is, the Suns aren't going to be bad. So I hope he's on the Suns. I hope he doesn't get traded, because if he gets traded, I think the Suns improve. So I hope he stays on Phoenix. And that is the end of my eulogy of the Phoenix Suns. I'm happy to see him go. I'm happy to see him go. What thoughts on the Suns? Go ahead. Get me off my soapbox.
So when the trade initially happened for Kevin Durant, I reacted emotionally, and I thought that they were going to be contenders, because I mean, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, you know, and Aiden sliding into that fourth option spot, I thought that was
gonna everyone be great. Did though, man.
Yeah, everyone everybody. Did. Like, it's Kevin Durant, man. Like what would you say to that? But we quickly saw in the postseason that they have no bench at all.
We could have been out there for him, man.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll be in the corner shooting three. That's cool.
That's right. That's right. I'll set screens. I'll do right. that.
And then not only that, but when you lose Chris Paul, so you're without your point guard. Campaign, love Campaign from Memphis. I remember him growing up playing right. up against us when I played. Campaign is not, he's not a point guard. He's a shooting guard type of player.
Body.
Right. Yeah. So that, no. And then Aiden just said, I didn't want to play anymore. He said, I'm going to sit down, and you're stuck and you're stuck with Book and KD, and you have nothing else. And so Monty Williams, he can't have been blamed for that. And I said it on Three to Hardaway, like they were undefeated with KD in the lineup during the regular season. Now, of course, regular season is not equivalent to the postseason, but at least give them all.
And it was a soft schedule too. Let's be real. They played like nobody, but
True that. But at least give him like a couple of games to the next season to see how does it look with Monty Williams as a coach. He was a coach of the year 2 years ago. They were just in the NBA finals, lost to Milwaukee because Giannis went crazy in
six.
Game six had a 50-point triple double. Like, who was going to beat that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like you, I am happy for Monty Williams, who I think is a good coach. He's going to go somewhere and have a better opportunity. The Suns, I don't know where they go from here, because Chris Paul is going to be, I assume, is going to be gone next year. He has to be gone. You've seen it every year if you're Phoenix, even beyond the only time he was healthy, the last time Chris Paul was healthy was in the bubble with the Thunder, I believe. And they lost because they had an inferior roster. Beyond that.
That's true.
That's it. That's literally it. He was healthy then, and that's it. Like, as far as like him being long-term.
And he had – oh, man, this is going to sound wrong, but he also had that big break because of COVID, so he got the rest of his body. Mm-hmm. Man, that's so true. I didn't think about it.
Chris
like
Paul
that.
Is knocking on 40, man, and Chris Paul is going to show flashes here and there, but over the course of – unless he does low management and he's cool. Matter of fact, I would just sit Chris Paul for the entire season. Just sit him for the entire season and bring him into the postseason, man. Draft the point guard, let him play. And as soon as, like, about April, like, hey, go ahead and let Chris Paul come in here. You be the backup point guard. That's what I would do if just knowing how Chris Paul is. With Aiden, his trade value is in the dumpster. I know they shouldn't let him walk. They should have let him walk to Indiana or trade him to Indiana.
They should have.
Could have had Miles Turner. Could have had Buddy Hield. But they when they signed him, I was like, what are y'all doing? Y'all saw him in the postseason last year and he was soft. And so, again, this year, he's still soft. So, the Suns, like Kevin Durant, is a bad omen for your team. he's a bad omen, man. It's a bad, like, he left Brooklyn to go play somewhere else, and it's still just as bad now. New ownership, the owner is crazy. He's squabbling with Jokic on the side. Like, you bring in a new coach, and to be honest, Francis, who are the options for the coach? Nick Nurse, I guess. Doc Rivers.
They're trying to They want Ty Lue bad. They want Ty Lue really bad.
I could,
because the reports are saying that, but Ty Lue ain't leaving. I mean, yeah, he's on their contract. He's not going
to
go anywhere.
Yeah, they're going to have to trade draft picks, and they don't have draft capital because y'all traded for Kevin Durant. Like, so.
Yeah, you trade a first round pick for Ty Lue.
No. So yeah, I'm of the same mindset. It's going to be ugly next season for the Suns, and I'm happy with that because I thought they were going to be good, and they're not. So.
Yeah, let me say this other thing about the Aiden thing, because last year when they signed Aiden, I got on my soapbox again about Phoenix, because they made a whole deal out of, we're not going to pay DeAndre Ayton that max contract. We're not going to do it. Like, they were very clear about it. They're like, no, we're not going to do it. And that's why Ayton was like, screw you to the whole entire franchise. Mm-hmm. He was angry and upset with Monty, upset with the ownership. Like, I want to be out of here. And then Phoenix, as soon as Ayton has, as soon as a team shows interest in Ayton, that they're going to, he's actually going to leave, Phoenix is like, oh, no, actually, here you go. Here's your money. Here's your money. It's like, God, there's like a, there's a damn relationship analogy that I can't fully put the words to. It's like, you don't want them, and then you see that, like, that girl or somebody
wants your, somebody wants
the person. Like, you try to play cool, like, I don't want her, I don't like her like that. Then, like, your friend, like, hits her up and, like, tries to talk to her, like, oh, no, actually, she's mine. Like, wait, you gotta decide. Like, you have to decide. You can't do that. And that's what they did. They just were so dumb with the whole Ayton stuff. And I'm happy to see them lose. I really am happy. I was ecstatic. I like fist bumped. I was at a bar and walked home. I like fist bumped on the way home. I was really excited to see them lose. All right. So enough about the Suns. We've already gotten their ass too much. All right. So let's talk about Golden State Lakers really quick. Obviously we know who won the series. Lakers won that series. And I have a question for you.
Okay.
You know, does this say more about how good the Lakers are, or is this like the end of the Warriors dynasty? Is this it? Is it time to transition, or what? Where's your head at in that?
To me, it says more about the Warriors, man. We see how the series is playing out against the Nuggets with the Lakers, and I've known it for like a while. I think it's just the Warriors, man. The Lakers, they're a good team. They made a trade, you know, mid-season to improve their roster, which they did. But the Warriors are just looking like they look shot, man. Like, the Steph is still Steph. I mean, he's the greatest shooter of all time. Klay is too inconsistent. He's not himself anymore.
No.
When he shows flashes, he's great. But there are games where those games he was left wide open several times. I think LeBron was just like playing Ben Simmons defense against Klay Thompson. This is arguably the second greatest shooter of all time. Leave him open, and he's breaking his shots. And Klay, I mean, beyond the shooting, Klay cannot laterally move anymore on defense.
No.
He was a lockdown defender, not anymore. Draymond, I think, still has value, but his antics, are they worth it? You know, if you're the Golden State Warriors, do you want to keep that around? He punched Jordan Poole in the face, and Jordan Poole, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Like, you –
$128 million for Jordan Poole.
That is malpractice as an organization.
Oh my gosh.
And what's crazy is people were calling it even when he was playing well. They're like, you cannot pay this man all this money, because honestly, the run that the Warriors had last year was injury laden. They kept running into luck each time. We all know, and of course, this is like, you know, what if. But if Ja Morant does not get hurt, the Grizzlies probably are going to come back and win that series. We saw game two.
That series.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. And so they had luck to win that series. But yeah, Jordan Poole, like, the money he is owed for the next 4 years. Now, somebody probably will trade for him and try to think they can make the most out of him. Charlotte probably do with something. I don't know. But, like, to pay him and keeping him cannot be an option. It might be an option that they can't, you know, make a choice.
Him being
about
Jordan Poole?
Yeah, they cannot keep Jordan Poole. There were too many times he's a liability on defense.
Yeah.
On offense, he's dribbling, going to the goal, turning the ball over, throwing the crazy shit at the goal. I'm like, what are you doing? And then he shot like terrible towards the end of the series. And the Golden State Warriors are a franchise that they want to do well in the playoffs. He is not conducive to playoff success. He might win games in the regular season, but when you're
a good point.
When you're locked in a gauntlet with a team for seven games, he is not going to win you a series. He's not going to do it. It's not going to happen. So I think it's more about the Warriors being done. Of course, Draymond has a player option. I think it's a player. Is it player option or team option? I can't remember. It's one of the options.
Player option.
Player option. Okay. And it's about $30-something million. I mean, unless he thinks he can get more money on the market, which he might, depending on if the Lakers want to pay him some money or whoever, the Grizzlies, in my opinion. I would love Draymond just to have him play with Jaren. That's an aside. But yeah, like they got to figure out something. Like, are they going to keep Klay, Steph, and Draymond together? Because I think if you lose one of those, you're going in a completely different direction. The most likely to be gone would have to be Klay, but I don't know if they want to run it back next year or what. But they got decisions to make. And Joe Lacob talking about getting up out of there. And that might change the dynamic of the team, you know. So, but I think it's more about the Warriors being done. Yeah, I think it's more about them. And they, on top of that, I ain't getting to like the young players. So the two timelines, you got the older players, and then you got Kuminga, you had Wiseman, you had who's that
Moody?
Moody. So it's like those guys want to play, and Moody look great. Kuminga, I think, can be good somewhere else. Wiseman, we'll see about Wiseman in Detroit, but you have like two different factions competing within the same thing, and you want everybody to be on the same accord. So they got some tough decisions to make in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, their whole thing was always trying to be the new Spurs, who the Spurs were. I mean, off the top of my head, they're probably the only – I'm trying to think. I'm trying to go through my basketball mind. Maybe – and help me out too. Are the Spurs the only franchise to truly bridge to –
Yes, I agree.
I think that's it.
Because they're were the only one. They were competitive for like 25 years, like from like the late 90s up until – when was the last ring? Like 14?
2015. Yeah, something like that with Kawhi. And
with Kawhi, right. And so you spanned like from early in the 90s, they had Robinson, Duncan, Del Negro, Avery Johnson, all the way to the 15. We had Kawhi, Tony Parker, who else? Manu. I don't know if they had Simmons. Jonathan Simmons was in there somewhere. But you had like literally different – like, probably Jaren Jackson's dad was part of the 90s, 97, 18. You know what I'm saying? Like, and just imagine that. You know what I'm saying? So, they're, like, it's hard to do. Only one franchise has done that, and that's the Spurs.
Right.
You know,
it's so hard.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, because you have a franchise that is okay with, you know, Pop being allowed to do his thing, to grow. And then, not only that, it's the system because of, like, you have such even, like, there's no Draymond with Tim, Manu, and Tony. Everybody knows their role. And even when Kawhi's not Draymond, Kawhi don't even talk. He barely talks. So when you get there, there's no friction. Nobody's gonna punch somebody. And if it does happen, nobody knows about it. The fact that video got out last year was like, what? How does that video
wild?
How does that video? That's a private practice. Who sold that video to TMZ? What is going on?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm mad they got Wimby. I'm like, oh my god, they got Wimby. This
another 15 years.
Warriors. That's they tried to be the Spurs, and I think Draymond ruined it for him.
It's wild. Like, he punched a player. Like, not just he like full body. Like, he jump punched into it. Basically, like, he went for it, and we kind of just tried to but a lot of NBA fans tried to brush it aside and not make it like such a big of a deal. I'm like, come on, man. That's the Warrior Sheen trying to cover the actual way that actually went. So yeah, I think it's more so about the Warriors too. Now we'll talk about Lakers, Denver in a moment, but I think LA is a genuinely like very good team. But I think it's more so on the Warriors. Just like you said, I'm not going to restate your points. I agree. You know, Klay's not the same. Draymond, he lost his step. He still has value. But, you know, yeah, I'm totally with you. I think it's more so the Warriors as well. All right, briefly, let's talk about New York and Philly. We obviously know that New York, they probably hit their ceiling. Like, I think, like, losing to the Heat, yeah, that's tough. But I think with this roster currently constructed, second round exit is probably the best they can do in a pretty talented Eastern Conference, especially if the top end of the East is like as good as anybody. So this is probably their ceiling. I mean, what do you think? What moves? Is there even a move out there? I mean, there's rumors that they're going to be in play to try and trade for Joel Embiid. Like, holy crap. If that happens, good Lord. But I think this is their ceiling. What do you think?
Yeah, they have to get off of Julius Randle. They just have to.
Yeah.
I'm a left-handed player, so I love left-handed players. But like, Randle is he's a malcontent. Not necessarily like Draymond per se, but like on the court, he's like, you know, when he's not like
excited. He's like a diva.
Yeah, he really is. He really is, man. Like, he's pouting, he's dragging his feet. They won, what was that, game two? And he was still like, I didn't score enough points. Like, what? Dude, exactly. He won the game. So, now, I don't know his value. I've always said he is a glorified six man. He can come in and get buckets all day long, but I cannot have him starting. And he wants to start. That's why I think he's going to get the Boogie Cousins treatment very soon. Like, I feel like in about 2 weeks. I think in 2 years he'd be at the league. I really think so.
Wow.
I think so. I really think so. Like, he just thinks he thinks he's this, and then he's got the accolade.
Sure.
All-star. He's been all NBA. He's been most improved, if I remember correctly. So he has the cachet, but it's like you're really not that. And that's a detriment.
He's not that guy.
Yeah, he's not that guy. Yeah. So I think if he I don't know his value because I don't think he really has that much value. Somebody will take him. Like, somebody, if you want, like, a second, third option, will take him. But I say get off of him. They really need a point. I don't say a point guard, but because RJ is okay. But RJ, he's inconsistent. He's too up and down. And he's a young player. He had time to improve. I think if he kind of goes the Andrew Wiggins route and is, like, a third or fourth option on a contending team, he'll be really, really good. But he got to be able to make his shots, his open shots. I can't really see how they improve unless they do get Joel Embiid. I'll be very surprised. I'll be very surprised they get Joel Embiid. But Philly's in a weird spot too because James Harden ain't coming back. I'll be surprised if he comes back.
Yeah. No, same. I'm with you on New York. I mean, they got to get off of Julius Randle. Brunson's really good, and they love they love Jalen Brunson out there in New York. But I mean, they kind of just need what almost every NBA team needs to contend, a 3-and-D wing, like a legitimate 3-and-D wing that they don't have. They were hoping Barrett was going to be that guy, but he can't shoot, unfortunately.
And they just paid him too, so he kind of stuck with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a good defender, and he has some offensive ability, but he just can't shoot. So that's a big issue for him. All right, let's talk about Philly now. Who's really to blame for you for Philly's loss to Boston? People blame Doc, Embiid, Harden, someone else. You know, who is it? Who's fully to blame?
So my trolling mind is going to blame the owner because you chose to create the vortex of Daryl Morey, James Harden, Doc Rivers all together who just
– Oh, yeah.
They are allergic to success in the playoffs. This is how it is. But I'm going to put it on the head honcho. I'm going to put it on Joel Embiid, man. Like, you can't not – demand the ball when your team needs you to demand the ball. Like, he had a 4 minute time period
where
he did not touch the ball. Like, you have to demand the ball. Like, if somebody gonna get punched, that's the time to get punched. Like, hey, give me the ball. Yeah. So like pass the ball to me. But I think it's an organizational failure. And I'm a Ben Simmons supporter, knock on wood, because I hope he comes
as I'm aware.
but I think Ben knew that Philly, and I'm an Eagles fan. I know Philly is toxic. I know it's a toxic environment, toxic fan base. They're very diehard. It's very uncomfortable in Philadelphia. And so when things don't go right, whether that's in with the Phillies or the Eagles or the Flyers or the Sixers in this case, the fan base is going to want significant change almost every offseason. That's just how it is. And so they feel pressure to make those changes, go get James Harden, trade Ben Simmons, you know, do all these things to improve the roster. And they are literally flaming out, you know.
Yeah.
Now, they do have something with Maxi. I don't know if you want Maxi to be your main guy. He's a very streaky player, I would say. But I think they have something in him. But do you want to give him the keys to be your lead guard? Now that James Harden's not, and he's undersized, man. You can't have him and Melt to get. They both like 5'11", man. Like you're not gonna play those guys. I'm kind of concerned for Philadelphia, like beyond this season, because like how do they get better? Joel Embiid will be 30 years old next season. He's known to get hurt every single postseason. He got hurt this postseason. You have to look. Can you win with him? Can you win with Joel Embiid? And we always say on Through the Hardaway, trade while the value is high. If you're going to trade Joel Embiid at some point, if you don't see winning the championship the next 3 to 4 years, I would go ahead and move him and just get what you can, cut your losses, and try to grow, try to restart the process, which is kind of bad because it's a curse word in Philly, process.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I'm concerned. That's what I don't know what they do, but I'm concerned.
No, I agree. I think you know, if you trade, if they do trade Joel Embiid, they take y'all's advice and trade with the value. I mean, he just won an MVP, for God's sake. He's mm-hmm. still an incredible player. But if they do that, you're going to, like you said, they're going to do that. They're going to restart the process. Obviously, they're not going to bring back James. And it's going to be like, what, 5 years of hell for Philly fans again mm-hmm. without Joel Embiid? And Philly loves Joel Embiid. Those fans, they still love that guy.
Yep.
So I don't know. It's like a huge – it's you have to weigh a lot of factors. Is it worth it to go through that process again with, you know, the – well, I think if I – and correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they – they were talking about adding high schoolers to the draft, but didn't that get, like, rescinded? I might be wrong. I thought I saw something that it got rescinded.
I think it got rescinded because I feel like they were going to do it, but
yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head right now.
I thought I could have sworn I saw something, like, months ago that they were, and everyone was pissed off about it because, like, they were close and they chose not to. But either way,
yeah,
I just don't – I don't know. I don't think I would trade Joel just because – I wouldn't put Philly through that again. Because if you trade Joel Embiid, you're putting him through years and years of just not fun, just really crappy basketball. And yeah, they're going to be building to something better, but they've seen that. They've seen the story before, obviously. Like there's no fan base that's more familiar with the process than the Philadelphia 76ers. So I wouldn't do that to the fans. And I still think you can get pieces around Joel that properly complement him. Dame, I mean, Harden, yeah, hell, Dame. Maybe Dame. Like, and you know, Harden had flashes of looking like a really good player, looking like prime James Harden, but you still can't rely on him in the playoffs. He does get hurt as well, and he's old. He's like 34, off the top of my head. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's getting up there. He's not. Yeah. He wasn't the answer. You know, he wasn't the answer to playing with Joel Embiid and leading them to a championship. So they got to figure something out and try to still build around Joel in my mind. You know, for me, who I blame for the loss, I think Embiid's, and actually he's a good answer because he has to demand the ball. I think for me, I just blame the loss on Doc. the whole team, like we all watched game seven. They just gave up.
They gave up, man.
They gave up. Like, they straight up gave up. That's the same. They let go of the rope. That's what all the NBA people were saying. Like, they let go. They stopped caring. They stopped fighting as soon as that. And that's on the coach, man. That's on Doc. Like, you're telling me that they don't have enough pride to at least fight for their coach, to fight for their – I mean, like you said, you know, Embiid as well, fight for their MVP. Mm-hmm. They don't have that pride. Like, nah, that's a problem. That's a structural issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the season ended – or Harden did his exit interview and he was basically like, yeah, me and Doc are okay. We're okay. And then obviously he's probably going to go back to Houston and Doc got fired. Like there were issues in that locker room, genuine issues. And I think it starts with Doc.
Yeah.
I really think it starts.
I don't know why Doc keeps getting hired, man. Like I've been on this train even since Doc was with Boston. Doc, he won Coach of the Year with the Magic. Whoop-de-doo, you had T-Mac and others. Like, I don't really care about that. But, like, he you had KG towards the end of his prime. You had Paul Pierce towards the end of his prime. And you had Ray Allen, who's one of the greatest shooters of all time. KG is the heartbeat of that Boston championship team.
That's and Rondo. He was Rondo in his prime.
Right. Yeah. So your roster was immaculate. It was and on top of that, the NBA won the Boston. They wanted Boston versus LA, and Boston was gonna win. You know, that's whatever. But yeah, Doc, you look at all his stops. At some point, the team quits on him consistently. The end of the Boston run. The team quit on him, and they traded him to L.A. The end of the Clippers run, the team quit on him. We saw Paul George talked about it on his podcast. And then even on this run for, like, 3 years, the team gives up on him. Like, at some point, I want NBA teams to give up on Doc. Like, Doc, just let him go to the let him go to the ESPN or Fox or podcast. Do something else, man. Like, because I'm personally tired of NBA players being subjected to Doc Rivers. I'm tired of it. I'm over it. I am so over it. How does this man keep getting paid? How is he top 15 all time coaching? It gets on my nerves, man. I respect Doc, but it gets on my nerves.
I'm with you. I'm trying to look up because I remember JJ or Doc said something about those Clippers teams that JJ Redick was on. Something like they didn't have enough heart or something like that. I think it's something along those lines.
Man, you're the coach.
When the Sixers lost, JJ tweeted, like, well, did the Sixers not have enough?
Heart? I remember that.
Phrasing. It was something along those lines. I'm like, that's great. That is awesome. I love that.
You know what would be good for you, Francis, is if Doc goes to Phoenix.
Oh, my God, please. Yes. Oh, I'd be so happy. That would be – oh, that would make me so happy. Dude, if he goes to Phoenix, NBA Twitter will have a field day. Like, we will have a field day of just talking crap about the Phoenix Suns. It would be fantastic. I hope that happens now. All right, so let's go into the conference finals, and let's start out east because there's a certain Jimmy Butler playing out of his skin and just willing a roster of – I mean, Tyler Hero's hurt. Kyle Lowry, I mean, he just gets hurt a lot too.
Oladipo.
They still have Oladipo's hurt. They still Bam played well last game, so that's good to see Bam. But like, I'm also still, I'm on the fence about Bam. I expect more from him on a consistent basis. I was hoping for he hasn't taken that step forward that I've been looking for. We've been looking for him, but either way, they're 2-0 up on the Boston Celtics after a game two at Boston where. Boston was up by 9 or no, was there up by 11?
They were by 9, 9-10. It was 9-10, one of them.
And Grant Williams hits that 3, goes into Jimmy Butler's face, says some, I'm sure, were very unpleasant things to Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy, I love Jimmy, man. His face was like, you? Really? Like, you're the one talking to me right now? Okay. And, you know, I've been on this podcast on record saying that I don't think Jimmy can lead a team to a title. He can't be the best player on the championship team. I already apologized for my mistakes. I have confessed of my sins. I am cleansed. I'm clean. I'm on the redemption tour of Jimmy Butler. And I mean, he's playing out of his skin. I mean, I don't know what your prediction was entering the series, but how much of this surprises you?
So I said Heat in 6 or 7. I can't remember exactly because I felt
okay.
I feel like it's more about Boston because Boston something's going on. Like some with the dynamic of the team with Tatum and Brown. I feel like they're cool with each other. Like you can be cool off the court, but you don't mesh on the court. And of course, they both are in all NBA caliber players. I mean, I'm not going to disrespect them, but. Something has to be said about whatever it is going on with them in terms of like a basketball sense. Joe Mazzulla is a first-year coach, kind of in over his head because you went from being behind the bench and then he may have had a situation with the other coworker, and now you are the main guy. And so I feel like it is kind of unfair to expect him to be perfect in his first year coaching a NBA Finals caliber team. But at the end of the day, like once you get here, it's like you're here. So we expect to win, and if we're not winning, then like we might have to do something that's even better for our roster. But I think it's more about Boston. But Miami is who I had winning, and Jimmy Butler has been – I don't know what's gotten into him. I mean, I know what's gotten into him, but it's to be this steady for so long, like in terms of like this season – is kind of like, all right, at some point he's going to have a bad or terrible game, you know what I'm saying? But he continues to do – if he's not on offensively, I'm getting 6 steals on defense. I'm locking down your best player. I'm getting 7 or 8 rebounds. I'm hyping up my teammates. Like, Bam – I think Bam and Jimmy is a perfect, like dynamic duo because sometimes Bam needs somebody to get into his face to kind of rile him up to get
that's
him
good,
going.
That's a good point.
And even, like, even with – being kind of disappointed in Bam. Bam had his best year offensively, 19 points a game. So it's like he improved, but he still has room for even more improvement. And you got to be encouraged if you're Miami to know that he's still a young player, but he has room to get even better and to have literally Michael Jordan's son, Jimmy Butler, on the team with him is going to bode well for him. And the team is going to be even better next year. Depending on if they decide to move on from Tyler Hero to get more pieces around them, or they decide to bring them back and Oladipo comes back. But yeah, I'm not surprised Miami won at least one game. I am surprised that Boston folded to lose 2 straight home games. That I am surprised about.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had Boston in 7 to win the series just because I kind of buy the conspiracy that the NBA wants Boston, LA,
Boston and Lakers, final. Yeah.
Even though I'm picking Denver in the other series, but still, I still buy the conspiracy. Anyway, I'm surprised that they lost game 2, especially in the manner they did. You know, watching that game, I really felt like Yeah, Miami had the lead at points in the game, but I thought Boston just had control. Like, it's one of those games where, yeah, the other team may have a lead for a period of time, but if you're a Boston fan, I wouldn't really feel uncomfortable at points in the game, and then you go up by 9, 11, 10 or 11, whatever it was after that Grant Williams three with like 3:30 left, 3:46 left, and you got to be feeling good, and then all of a sudden, just. I mean, frankly, they shit the bed. Like they just shit the bed. They couldn't score on offense. They look lost. They couldn't. No one could guard Jimmy Butler. Nope. Why do teams keep allowing Jimmy Butler to play one on one?
That's what I'm saying. Why? Thank you, Fred. Thank you.
Why? Like, what
get the ball out of his hands, please. Get the ball out of his hands.
What are we doing? Like, what's going through everyone's mind on the Boston Celtics? Like, yeah, you know what, Jimmy Butler, best player on the team, maybe the best player in the series. Yep. You want to go play one-on-one against Grant Williams?
Like, did y'all not watch Malcolm the film Robin? Of the New York series, man? New York kept doing one-on-one. I'm like, why? Why do y'all keep doing this?
Not just that. Have you not watched Jimmy Butler his whole career? Like, yes. What are we doing? It makes no sense to just get the ball out of his hands, please. Like, please. And, you know, credit to Miami, credit to Spoelstra. I love Eric Spoelstra, Filipino. Yes, God, I love him so much. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic. Probably the best coach in the NBA right now. So credit to him for having lineups that always give Jimmy Butler spacing. Mm-hmm. Every time he's on the floor, there are three shooters, and then bam.
Yep.
Every time. That's the recipe to why Miami's so damn good, because if you don't allow Jimmy to play one-on-one, they'll just swing, open.
Struce making shots. Vincent making shots, man.
Exactly. It's off-ball movement, swing, cutter to the basket, cheats up forward, backdoor cut, layup. Like, it's just so smooth and fluid. If you double Jimmy, if you take the ball out of his hands, they're gonna pass and cut, spot up, move off ball. It's going to be probably a bucket because that's their clean their offense is. Mm-hmm. But even then, even with that said, my key to Boston moving forward, please, for the love of God, take the ball out of Jimmy Butler's hands. Just blitz screens, trap him, all this stuff. Get the ball out of his hands, please, especially in the clutch, especially within the last 5 minutes, 3 minutes of the game. You cannot let Jimmy Butler just play one-on-one basketball like he's at the park. Like, you can't do that because he's going to ruin you. He's going to do the too small on Grant Williams. He's going to post up Malcolm Brogdon, who I like Malcolm Brogdon's game, but that dude, he's not a defender. He can't. No. He's not. That's not it. And Marcus Smart, you know, defensive player last year, but he is literally too small. He is just too small. Butler is 6'6", 6'7", strong, big dude, and he's just going to out-muscle Marcus Smart. I mean, you can probably have Marcus Smart pester Jimmy Butler, but that's probably about it. Like, it's probably about it. Otherwise, Jimmy's just going to put him in a blender and finish with a floater over him in the paint. So, or hit a fadeaway. I mean, it's so hard. He's damn near unguardable one-on-one. And maybe you put Jaylen Brown on him. Maybe you put Tatum. But I think doing that, it expends too much energy of Tatum and Brown, because you need them on offense. Like, I've thought about this, like, yeah, maybe you put Tatum or Brown on them, but that Jimmy's just going to wear them out.
Yeah.
So on offense, they're going to have no legs to score.
Yeah.
So they're going to be useless on that end if you put them on Butler.
And Brown had a bad game yesterday. He had like 16 points. So yeah,
Yeah. So they gotta figure something out. I think the key is just Boston, get the ball out of Jimmy's hands. What about you? You picked Miami, but do you have a key for Boston?
For Boston, the coach in me would say one game at a time. And for you have to literally probably make a new game plan every game, because Coach Spo, I've said for years, the best coach in the game. Like,
right.
I remember LeBron trying to get him out of there first year with the Heatles.
Yeah.
And Pat Riley was like, nope. He'd been here since 95. He'd been here for about 20 some years up to that point. Like, nah, he gonna be here with us. And we see why Pat Riley chose to keep him. But if you are Missoula, you have to take every game by game. And in this case, I'm in lockstep with you as far as, like, get the ball out of Jimmy Butler's hand. Either that's one option, or if I'm Tatum, if I'm Jaylen Brown and I'm Coach Missoula, I'm like, look, you might not get your offense this time, but can you just, like, focus, lock in on defense, and just pass the ball on offense to our shooters, shooters make y'all shots. That's what I would hope. If you're not gonna double team him anyway, because I don't think they're gonna double team him. I think they might this round get swept, man. I don't know.
Oh man.
Speaking of that, how do you feel like they can come back from this series?
I mean, look, I have to stick with my before prediction. I'm gonna ride with it until it's over. I'm still sticking with Boston in seven. I mean, I've talked so much shit about Jimmy Butler. I can't go fully back on it, man. So I mean, do I believe it? No, I don't believe it. I think Miami probably wins it in six. You know, probably maybe five. But you know, I gotta stick with my prediction. And
I respect
that. If I'm right, hey, I'm right. But I'm probably not going to be right. You know, we're all wrong. Everyone is wrong more than they're right most in life.
Oh, no doubt.
It's okay. So I don't think they'll come back. No, I think it just like we talked about defensively. Jimmy's just playing too well, and if you double him, it just creates, like I mentioned, it creates motion and movement and open shots if you double Jimmy Butler, because everyone on that team is unselfish. Everybody's willing to move the ball. No, that's the thing. That's another thing. With Boston, there's too many possessions, especially down the stretch, where the ball sticks.
It sticks, man.
What
was that? That was Tatum. Tatum shooting a random three. The ball, it was like ugly. Like, dude, what are we doing? Move the ball.
Yeah. And it's too often, because they're so good individually, and they both feel that they're an all-world ISO player, which, I mean, they are.
Which is weird for me, because Brad Stevens was your coach 2-3 years ago, and he thrives off of ball movement. So, this is weird.
And to be fair, I mean, Mazzulla, his offensive philosophy is also, like, get threes up and move the ball. Like, it's a similar offensive philosophy, but it's just the way Tatum and Brown are wired. You know, Tatum, you know, RIP Kobe, but Tatum's got that Mamba mentality where he's like, I can be the guy. Just throw me the ball. I can go get a bucket against whoever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while Jimmy has that similar mentality, they also have enough shooting around Jimmy Butler to take the risk of, you want to score a bucket on us, score 2 points, that's better than us giving up a wide open three. Yep. Like Boston, their other players have to hit shots. Mm-hmm. You know, Grant Williams hit a couple threes, Brogdon hit a couple threes, you know, but they need I don't know if they have enough shooting around them to make Miami pay, but also Tatum and Brown just have to be better. I mean, straight up, they got to be, especially Jaylen Brown, like you said. Mm-hmm. He was bad in the last game, but no, I don't think they're going to come back. I'm still going to stick with my prediction, but I don't think it'll come true. All right, so let's go Lakers Nugets, and then we'll do our championship prediction. So I'll start with my prediction for Lakers Nuggets. As I said earlier, I picked Denver in seven. I think this goes seven games. I know they're up 2-0. But LA is undefeated at home. They're very good at home, and I went to the I still call it the Staples Center.
It's Staples, man. It's Staples.
I'm not calling it crypto dot stupid arena. So when I was at Staples Center, January 20th for the Shannon Sharp game when the Lakers played the Grizzlies, when I was there, I was impressed by that crowd. Like, I understand the Grizzlies are a young team. John Morant was obviously playing a superstar pole, but like, that crowd was electric. They were loud. They were into it. It was packed. I mean, to the rafters, that crowd was packed. And as I thought about it, like, yeah, the Lakers won a title in 2020, but there were no fans. Duh, it was in a bubble. So these fans, and like being in Southern California, the Lakers fans around me everywhere, they are hungry for success, like hungry to beat their chest. Like, I'm a Lakers fan. Look at us win the playoffs again. You know, they're like ravenous. So I really think the fans, when they go back to LA for games 3 and 4, I think they'll hold serve. I really believe LA is going to hold serve. And then I don't see them winning in Denver. I don't see them winning a game at Denver. Maybe Denver wins in six. Maybe they steal game six on the road. But I just don't think, and I just don't think they'll win game seven at Denver. And, you know, I'm a LeBron guy, so that means I'm picking against LeBron in a game seven. But I am. I'm going to pick Denver in seven. So what's your prediction?
Yeah, I had Denver in seven as well. Both of those teams, if I'm not mistaken, are undefeated at home. And I think it's going to be home wins all the way to game seven. It's hard to win Denver, man. It's already thin air. The Lakers were exhausted. It was a game one. Like, they were blowing smoke out there.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the key for – if the Lakers are going to win this series, they got to guard the other players, man. Like, you can't have Bruce Brown, Christian Brown, Murray and Porter Jr. Like, these other guys are contributing, and that's hard because the Joker thrives off that. The Joker wants to pass the ball, like, but he can also get 30, 40, 50 points if he needs to. Yeah. And so it's going to be so hard for the Lakers to win. I think Denver's just a significantly better team. They're the best team in the NBA, in my opinion, just in terms of, like, just the coaching, the players, everybody understands their role. And the timing of, like, players stepping up. Like, Jamal Murray knows when it's time to step up. He's like, all right, it's time for me to go. I can do it. KCP, he knows when it's time to lock in, make threes. Porter Jr. and then the role players on the bench. It's a perfect storm for Denver. And I think if the Lakers win, I'll be very surprised. One, if they do win, I'm picking them to win because you beat the best team, in my opinion. I had Denver in seven, and it might be six, depending on if the Lakers just kind of run out of gas. But yeah, I got Denver in seven.
Yeah, I mean, Jokic is just, you know, watching game two, I was watching with a friend of mine who's a big Lakers fan, but he's not like – he's a smart Lakers fan. So he's a rare breed.
I was like, rare breed right
there. He's a rare breed of Lakers fan. He's not an ignorant asshole. As, you know, it's a rare breed. But anyway, we're like, why isn't Jokic just being more aggressive? But then he finishes the game with 23 points, and it's just like the easiest 23 points probably.
That was a bad game for him, like, too. That was a bad game.
Yeah, it's a bad game. Like, it's – he'll get 23 – like, last stat line, 23 points, 12 assists, 17 boards. And, like – it's just effortless. Like, it doesn't look like he's trying out there. Like, it just doesn't. It's so seamless. Reminds me a lot about Tim Duncan. Like, you watch Tim Duncan play, and he, you know, you blink, he puts up 25, 10 boards, like three blocks. And, like, it just, it's effortless basketball. Like, Jokic lets the game come to him. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that he forces himself on the game, but he can, and if he does, he'll get like 50, which he's done before. So you know, he's so good. The key for LA for me is Anthony Davis. I mean, like, no shit, he is such a maddening player to watch. He'll go he had 40 in game one, and then game two he had 18. Like, come on, like, what are we doing here? What's happening? Yeah, he had double-double, 18, 14 boards, but like, What's the disconnect? And there, I talked to my friend who's a Lakers fan. It's like, it is so damn annoying to watch Anthony Davis on a night in, night out basis, because you just don't know what version. Like, you're either gonna get Shaquille O'Neal or Nerlens Noel. Like, it's like, there's no in between. There's no in between. There's nothing.
There's no steadiness with him, man. Like, even back in the bubble, he would have two or three good games in a row, and then it's that one game, the fourth game, he always is like, I do 10 points, 5 rebounds. I ain't doing that.
Yeah, for real. So I don't know. He's the key. If the Lakers win this series, AD's got to be the best player for them. I mean, hell, he's got to at least be pound for pound with Jokic. I don't know if he can be the best player over Jokic, but he's got to be pound for pound.
They're both on, like, extreme opposites, because Jokic is going to be steady every time. Like, he's going
to get a good point.
Triple-double every single time. And AD is going to do 40-20, 40-20. And we haven't even gotten into LeBron. Like, LeBron, he's, what, 1-for-20 his last 23s? And he keeps shooting them. He's exhausted. He has no legs right now. And he can't go to the goal because he has no legs. So it's like, you're really playing a game with one arm tied behind your back with LeBron playing, which is kind of weird to say because LeBron is probably one of the best, like, top two, top three, depending on who you ask.
Sure.
And LeBron has to contribute in ways that he's done in the past, but he physically cannot do it. That's the hard part. Unless LeBron somehow, you know, turns back into the LeBron of even like 3 or 4 years ago, it's going to be so hard for the Lakers to win, man. I cannot see it.
Yeah. I mean, as Grizzlies fans, we're like, where is this LeBron last series? Like, we need, he wasn't great against Memphis, but, you know, he still had his moments.
We couldn't guard Rui Hachimura. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's true.
And Austin Reeves.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, with LeBron, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt because it's LeBron James. So, like, it's hard to tell, like, hey, LeBron, stop shooting. Like, you got to just live with it. You know, if he misses shots, you go down with the
shift. They've been in the games.
Yeah, they had leads. Like, they were up by 10 at a point in time over against Denver, like, on two occasions.
Yep.
Like, they have leads. They're still there. That's why I still believe it'll go seven, because these are tightly matched teams. I mean, no, again, no shit if they win game three, if Denver wins game three, it's over. I mean, yeah, they're going to probably win four or five, but I don't think it'll happen. I really think LA is going to win game three. And I think this will be a good series. So, all right. So my NBA finals is Denver and Boston if they pull a rabbit out their hat. And I'm going to pick Denver in I'll go Denver in six because I still think – I think that, like you said, best team in the NBA. I would love to see Jokic get a title, and I just don't see how – I don't see how Boston can match up. I mean, you have Al Horford, who is great against Embiid, so maybe he's the answer. I mean, Rob Williams – actually, well, now as I'm talking through it, maybe they could match up decently against Jokic, but I still would pick Denver to win the – to win the NBA Finals. I'll pick him in six. So what about you? What's your finals prediction?
Going into the playoffs, I had Denver and Milwaukee initially, and I had Milwaukee winning, and I didn't count on Jimmy Butler turning into a Super Saiyan against Milwaukee. So I picked Denver, obviously. I'm going to roll with Denver. I actually had Denver and Miami. So with that, I got Denver, man – I got Denver in six. Okay. And I say that because I feel like Miami's just going to run to a much better team. I mean, Denver and Miami are literally teams staring each other in the face. Like, your role players are playing at elite level. Your best players are playing at an elite level. And then you got two elite coaches in the game, with Michael Malone and Coach Spo. I just think that Denver's is a better roster. Would I be surprised that Miami wins somewhat? But, I mean, Jimmy Butler's playing – out of his mind. I mean, he's channeling his inner D-Wade when D-Wade won that first ring, where it was just like, nobody's stopping D. People were saying D-Wade was the best player in the league in 06. I got Denver in six. And I feel weirdly not as confident if they play Miami. I don't know. I just feel weird about Jimmy. He might turn into Michael Jordan. I don't know. But yeah, give me Denver.
Okay. All right, cool. So we both have Denver in six to win the NBA title. So what that means is that the Lakers will win the title. It's basically
probably,
what
yep, probably.
They're probably going to win the title. We're going to be wrong, but whatever. Okay. Well, look, man, Marcus, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on the pod. I appreciate you a lot. You know, if you don't follow this guy on Twitter, that needs to be changed. That needs to be changed. He's hilarious, and he knows his ball. He knows his sports. You know, I'm sorry about your Eagles. I was rooting.
It happens.
So I'm sorry about that. You know, I really was rooting for y'all. But yeah, so Marcus, tell the people where they can find you.
Yeah, so you can find me at on Twitter at msavage901. Twitter and Instagram. I'm not on Instagram as much. Instagram, I don't do as much sports. It's mainly my daughter and me.
Pictures. Just life.
Yeah, it's just life on Instagram. I kind of post and leave. But yeah, I'm msavage901. Mainly tweeting about basketball and other random stuff. I try to keep it light. I tend to do jokes or sports, just keeping everything light. I don't really get into politics and everything. So I'm a fun follow, I would say. The podcast is at the number three, the Hardaway, like Penny Hardaway, pod, P-O-D. That's on Twitter, Instagram, and on TikTok as well, too. Mainly those are clips from our channel or just funny memes, because I'm a memes person, man. You got to laugh to enjoy life, man. So I'm all about entertainment, funniness, and sports. We're also on YouTube as well, too, at Three to Hardaway Pod, if you're not over there on YouTube. And we release every, depending on the week, Monday or Sunday we record, and the audio release the day after, but you know we'll be somewhere in somebody's podcast or YouTube channel
for sure.
That's how we are. But yeah,
for sure. Like, much respect for y'all, your other co-hosts on the pod. Y'all do awesome work. Definitely go check them out. Three to Hardaway Podcast. Check them out. They're awesome. They're really fun to listen to, and they obviously know their ball. And again, Marcus, thank you, man. It's an absolute, means a lot to me to have you on the podcast. Absolute honor.
You gotta get you on Through the Hardaway, man. We gonna do.
I know.
We'll probably do some guests over the summer once like everything dies down. We'll get some guests going, because I mean this offseason gonna be kind of hot, man. With movement, and players. So we'll get you on in the summertime.
I'm down. Let's do it. I mean, we can talk offseason for the Grizzlies. Is gonna be chaotic. Offseason for the Tigers is just, oh my god. I have an article coming out. Quick plug. I have an article coming out for Bluff City Media. I'll be coming out sometime early next week. I mean, it's just, there's so much uncertainty with what's going on in Memphis basketball for pro and college. So,
yes, sir.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to being on the pod with y'all. And again, Marcus, thank you to everyone listening. Thank you all for tuning in, listening to the pod. Be sure to give us 5 stars, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, all that fun stuff. But until next time, peace.
Peace. Cool days, hot tops, with my blue face, ice pops. I'ma make a shoelace, necklace. Yeah, we whipping pops on Lexus. And I'm skipping school days, mic drops. Eyes on summer like Cyclops. Yeah, we falling off the sidewalk. Mama, want your home.